This is the picture on page 15 of the 4-H project. Livestock show.
That was taken at down at the Pacific International Livestock Show at Portland, and that is a calf that I'd bought from the Von Koger, the mother of that cow, that heifer is shown in the picture, and her mother, and I think I paid $35 for the two of them. And this picture was taken at the Pacific International by a representative of the Carnation Milk Company. They were offering, having a contest. They gave a free heifer away to whoever scored the highest and percentage of picture and why you were feeding calf manna, which is a replacement for milk.
Calf what?
Manna, M-A-N-N-A. Uh-huh. And there was another one too, I can't remember, but I won that contest when I was in a 4-H, and I won a heifer from the Carnation Milk Farms in Carnation, which is close to Seattle and in Washington. Mm-hmm. And later, about 3 years later, I was able, when I was a cow tester, between my junior and senior year in Oregon State, I had the privilege of going up to Carnation and testing some of their cows that were world record production cows at that time. And at that time, three of us went up and we searched the milkers when they came in to milk a cow. We searched them and carried their milk bucket for them and had a picture of the cow to see if that wasn't a different cow by our markings. And when the cows went out to pasture, we went out to pasture with them. And we did that for 2 weeks to certify that the world record cows weren't nothing under the table was being done. All right. They were under the Washington College, but they would call in someone from outside every now and then to make a test to see how they were running.
There's the question mark on the date here. Do you know about when it was?
Yeah, that the way that I can tell the date on that is by the boots I'm wearing. So that was my first year at Oregon State College, because we had to have boots like that in the field artillery that we had to take, ROTC.
Yes.
And the boots we thought were kind of expensive, so I was able to buy a pair of pants to wear with the boots. Instead of having to give up the boots. That's how I can tell exactly about when that was.
So what was the date?
About 1938. 38 or 39.
Okay.
Well, it'll be about 38 probably.
All right. Now, this one about sheep judging.
Yes,
what's said to be said about?
The big bull trout. So I let him have it until he swallowed it. And then I tightened up on him. And if you ever seen a fellow having a fight for about 10 minutes, and I drug that thing out on the rocks to where he was just a little water and a little rock in there, and
just so I can write the right things under these photographs.
This sheep judging, that was taken out at Mike Royce's farm in Somerville.
Mike who?
Royce.
Royce, R-O-Y-C-E?
C-E-S.
O-R-O-Y-E-S.
Royce.
Yeah.
Royce.
That's right. And the members in here have a little larger picture than that. I can name most of them.
Uh-huh. I can make this picture larger.
Yeah, I need to take it home. I've got that same picture.
You want a magnifying glass?
Well, it wouldn't help.
Oh.
I can't think of this fellow's name.
Are you in the picture?
I don't think I am. In fact, I don't really know that I have that same picture.
Well, I think I got it from you. You showed me a lot of pictures, and I made this selection.
I'll have to look. I've got another one that I want to get that blowed up for the county fair.
Even if you weren't in that picture, What significance does this picture have for you?
Well, I was the leader, and these are the 4-H club members that were in my club, and we were learning them how to judge and how to hold and how to show the sheep there.
Was this the Somerville club then?
It was the Ambler club, the Ambler sheep club, and I'm quite sure.
Are they high school age or older?
Well, they were younger than that. They were all, most of these were in grade school at that time.
Had you been helping them in sheep raising procedures?
Well, I probably was, and I might be in that actual picture when I look at it, because I think this gentleman right here is Frank McKinnon, and he was my first 4-H leader, and he later went on down to head the Department of Agriculture at Salem.
Are there any girls in that picture?
Yes, there's the second one is Courtright. Phyllis Courtright. I can recognize her here. And the third one, I think, is Farrell Skillings. And the rest down the line, there's Josephine Fisher from over the Cove. And this last one looks like it might be Walter Pierce.
Oh.
And Walter Pierce is... grandfather is governor of the state of Oregon, and I've got a better picture than this one, perhaps, that we could use. Now, this is the...
Can you say anything more about sheep judging?
Well, the main thing with these younger ones was to learn out what kind of a sheep to get for their 4-H project. And when you've got a lamb with a lot of wool on, you've got to feel of their loin and their ribs and some of those things, and see how they come up square, the leg of lamb, the mutton lamb, and see if it's good and deep in the rump, and such as that is one of the...
And all those qualities had to do with how the kids were raising the sheep?
Well, not so much on how they're raising, but more about the one that they picked out. You learn how to pick one when you go out to a farmer that had 50 lambs.
I see.
In fact...
Sure.
One of your committee members, I think, from Cove, that when he came back here, the school teacher back east?
Van Schoonhoven.
Yeah, John Van Schoonhoven. He said he remembered coming over to my place once, and evidently there was a small orphan lamb that kind of followed you around, and everybody liked, and is probably part orphan, and he wanted to buy that one, and I wouldn't let him buy it. And he said, there's one over there. You better look at that one. I finally convinced him to buy that lamb, and I completely forgot about it. So he came back after probably 50 years as a school teacher and told me about that instance at the time.
Yes.
Yeah, I think he said he got the champion lamb with that lamb.
That's why he remembers you
remember
so well.
Right, yeah. We were out when I saw him when he first came back, this is rather interesting. He was out to Doc Savage's, where we were planting apple trees. Doc Savage was putting in an orchard, and he's a good friend of Doc Savage, and I didn't recognize him, and he said who he was, and then I've seen him a good many times since then. All right.
A Boy Scout baseball team.
Well, this wasn't a Boy Scout baseball.
What was it?
It was a church. Mm. And the coach from the church and the pastor is here in the center, and it was Reverend Lyons, and the young boy carrying the bats here was his son. And
was this an Imbler church?
The Imbler church. And that may be the ones that they're wanting to tear down at Ambler, probably now, I would guess. But I have practically all the names of these boys on the picture. I couldn't give you them right now. This is Russell McKinnon, the first one, and his son, he was the went over to Pendleton Grain Growers, McKinnon Warehouse, as you go out, was named after him. And he has a son that went on to Oregon State, and He was president of the Alumni Association there four or five years ago.
Were you a coach of the team or involved in some way?
No, this was earlier, 1926. Uh-huh. I was probably 8 or 10 years old at that time.
So maybe I shouldn't put this picture in.
Well,
it doesn't seem to have anything to do with you.
No, it don't really with me.
Okay, I'll take it out.
But there's a lot of names here. The Wilson name, that is Wilson.
And well, it really doesn't belong in here if it's not connected to you.
No, it's not connected
to me. Okay, let's skip over that.
All right.
Do you want to say anything more about this accounting from your father from the Mercantile Company in Imbler?
That's kind of an interesting one because the superintendent of, can you come up with his name? I can never say it, but he's principal at Embler School last year and retired from the school district down that has their office in Island City, two or three. This was caught by him going down the, going down the street about, 4 or 5 blocks from, the basement where it was evidently stored in 1909, it says here.
Mm-hmm.
And that was about the year my folks had moved from Island City and LeGrand down to Embler. My father was the miller of the mill there at the time that it burnt, and he spent his whole career there in Embler. After the mill burnt, he went on to their grain warehouse there. And this other picture at the bottom.
Before we leave that, I'm wondering if this might have been where this company was located.
Yeah, uh-huh. It came from the basement.
So Clyde Kittle built this building and he put in the store, right?
Yeah.
So that's why it was connected with the Island City Flooring.
Well, I don't believe he built that. No. You can find something like that. His name is, this is Clyde Kittle up here, and the lady that did the research work on the building of that, she called it the wrong name, Kittle.
Kittle.
Yeah, I can remember going to that as a store, and it wasn't run by Clyde Kittle. It was run by his cousin, Lyle Kittle, in Embler at that time.
Mm-hmm. But That's where these items were purchased.
Right.
In this place.
In that place.
Good. Okay. And anything more about this receipt from the flour milling company?
This is shows quite a bit of interest. It says 1903 on it, and that's before Island City was made a town. They're just celebrating their 100th anniversary of 204, and my folks first came to Island City in around the 1900 time, and my father, this particular warehouse, which is just tore down 2 or 3 years ago, this porch right here in front, my father, and this is before he was married, and three fellows that were working there, they were just young bucks. They're taking their first job and around town, and a safe was being blew right in this corner. And they come home from a dance that Saturday night, and they saw that lantern going around in there, and they knew what was going on. And so this porch right here at the corner, the steps, he said the three of them went and knew what was going on, and they went and got big two-by-fours and hid under the porch there so that when the thieves come out, they were going to
whack them.
And instead, they went out the back door in the warehouse, and the guys were real lucky because there might have been some gunfire.
Yeah.
Well, they only had two-by-fours.
Uh-huh.
Probably the thieves had something a little more than gunfire.
Uh-huh.
Than two-by-fours. They probably had guns.
Was this receipt used when farmers brought their grain in?
Yeah. And it's all and brought, the thing that is
in it was weighed, and then they figured out how much they would earn from it?
And most of the farmers, this time when we had horses and no trucks,
sure.
And I wasn't born at that time either, and most of them had, were feeding hogs and milking some cows, mm-hmm. and would feed a lot of their grain. Now the picture I have, it's maybe a little more important than this one. It has a railroad car sitting right up here.
I have that picture too.
I think you have that mm-hmm. Oregon Short Line, and I have.
I decided not to put it in though because it was in Island City and not in Nimbler.
Yeah. Well, I've got a scoop shovel there at home yet that's got an old SL on it.
Is there any other connection between Imbler and this receipt?
Not really, no.
Maybe I shouldn't include it.
Not really. The this one shows England pounds of sugar coming from La Grande Imbler. But that's not me. I have nothing to do with that either. But Marie Cleaver and
I said the shipment was cost.
I think I'll make this one bigger because if you look very closely, you can see that crackers cost 25 cents, beans cost 20 cents, butter was 60 cents.
Yeah.
Meticulously recorded. And I noticed, too, that all of the money amounts are absent the decimal point.
Yeah, they're pennies, under a dollar.
Everything was under
400 pennies, huh?
Yeah. I've got one slip. I don't know whether you've got it or not. That shows a pair of overhauls there and took them out, and I think they cost a dollar, whether they're on there or not. But the next slip coming up a little later, it shows she took them back.
No.
Apparently Dad didn't like them. They weren't quite the right kind.
No, these are all food items, cheese and butter and raisins and walnuts, chocolate. And so on. I think I'll make that bigger on this page because it'll be easier to read. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk about these other buildings now. Tell me first about the old church. It was a Methodist church, I think.
Yeah, I went to Sunday school there when I was, I don't know. See?
Good. All right, this church.
Now, let's see which church you're
in. It's the old one.
The Methodist. Yeah.
It was there when you were born?
Yes, it was there when I was born. In fact, that church was moved from about as far up the line as Alisell. And the story goes that one fellow moved that church into Imbler with one horse and himself, with using a windlass to pull it up and then have to go up again. And
would they put peeled logs underneath?
What?
Would they put peeled logs underneath?
I don't know. No, I don't. That was back in about 1900, so I doubt if there's any steel, I imagine.
No, peeled.
Peeled logs,
peeled
yeah.
Log, yeah.
Yeah, I think I imagine they did something like that. And Howard Bingaman showed me here, probably less than a month ago, a note that was taken around town by different individuals signing a note to move the church in to Imbler. And there's one name on there, the blacksmith, and he gave 50 cents toward this note. And the biggest name on that was Jeff one of our big farmers out in the valley. I'll come with his name in a minute. So I can't remember that he gave $15 to move it in. And there's one or two that give $10, something like that. And Howard was carrying this note around in his pocketbook, and it was just about war in tune, and I hope he just put it in for that one day, because we need to get some copies made of that, without a doubt.
And do you think it was moved to Imbler because there wasn't a large enough congregation in Alisell?
Well, it wasn't quite in Alisell. It was more of a farm church, and it was moved to Imbler to get more people, without a doubt. All right. And the only one pasture that I can really remember there was Miss Van Blocklin, that is from Island City. Uh-huh. And the Van Blocklin family was quite prominent back in those years. You've probably heard their name many times.
Sure.
All right.
And at the time it was moved to Imbler, do you think it was the only church in town?
I kind of imagine that it was, but I don't know. There may be someone.
Was there a Mormon church there?
Well, I don't think it. There's a newer church than that.
Well, there was a building that was moved, I think, from Mount Glen. It's still there.
Yeah.
Near the school. It's being used by the school now for other things. But Elmer Perry's grandmother lived in a building nearby, and he was telling me about the building that was the Mormon church in Nimble.
Now, have you talked to Elmer?
Oh, yes. A lot.
Now, his sister was in the same class in school and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I've got to send Elmer, I've got his sister's graduation notice. In 1933, an envelope with her card and everything just as good as new, and I got in an envelope to send to him.
So when do you think this Methodist church stopped being used as a church?
Well, I can't say. It's probably back in the 30s to 40s.
Mm-hmm. Has it been mostly unused since then?
Right, mm-hmm. Yes.
And it's just continued to deteriorate?
Just continued to deteriorate. Mm-hmm. And now then the Historical Society has taken up to try to get it repaired, but we've got neighbors that want to tore it down and all that such as things, and I don't know how we're going to come out.
I think you were telling me about that dispute.
Yeah.
All right, on these others, let me read what I've written, and you tell me whether there's anything wrong.
Okay.
This is the Christian Church.
Yeah.
One of the currently most popular churches in the valley, the Christian Church is located on a site formerly occupied successively by a butcher shop, a barber shop, and a tavern. It has been built over several times. In the parking lot at the left, from about the 1920s, were a general store, an ice cream parlor, and a telephone office.
Yeah, the ice cream parlor was on the other side.
Oh.
On the town side toward the post, towards the
telephone
office there.
Well, so what was in the parking lot?
Well, there's just
the,
nothing.
The general store?
Well, as I remember it, I don't remember much of anything really being in it. There's kind of a duplex, and maybe or two or three families, something like that. The store was on the other side.
I see. To the right of the church as you're facing it?
To the left.
Well, that's what I thought, at the left.
At the left, yes. And the parking lot is on the right, the big lot.
Well, are you saying then that the ice cream parlor and the telephone office were not where the parking lot is now? They were on the other side of the church?
No. There, on the south side of the church.
Isn't that the parking lot?
Well, they have that big lot of grass on the other side. Mm-hmm. I kind of call it a parking lot. But they park most of their cars the other way. You're right on that. Yeah, they park around the... Mm-hmm. In fact,
well, then, just to be sure I'm correct here now, I thought when we were standing there, you were referring to the left-hand side of the building as you face it.
Right.
And that's where there was a general store.
Yeah.
And what else?
And the telephone office. Okay.
And the ice cream parlor was on the other side.
No. No, the ice cream parlor was part of the general store.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. Got that.
And it was owned by... Now, Elmer Perry might be able to tell you more about that than I can. Because the Wessons Coast and the Perrys are all upstairs together. You know.
Now here I have an older photo that you loaned me.
Now, I don't know whether you might want to map that. I give $1,000, first $1,000 to put that over.
I'll put that in if you want me to.
Well, it don't matter. The thing of it is, it came up the 4th of July.
Oh, I see. Okay.
The, he works in the... title office up here. He goes to church and helps start that. And he and two or three others came there, and I gave them their $1,000 before they asked me for it. I knew why they came. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that's kind of funny story is that this fella, he's wearing a cowboy hat there for the parade, and he's cooking for the church dinner that they have there now every 4th of July. free hamburger beans and such. And he said, I carry this cowboy hat with me, he said, because of you. I want to know why. As soon as he said, I know why, I told him. I went down, this is before Lori and I were married, I went down to the Pacific International Show. I showed down there 9 years straight in 4-H, and this is 20 years after that probably, I decided to go down there for a little vacation, and I got lost in Portland as usual. Before long I was over in Beaverton. So when I came back I hit I-5, and I couldn't get across I-5. It was about between 5 and 6 in the evening, and there were stoplights and four lanes of traffic, and as I went up there, there's a gap.
And I've written, this market building dates from the early 1900s and is currently one of the more popular stores in the valley. In addition to serving as a general store for many years, it has usually housed the Imbler Post Office.
And it used to be a general store. In fact, I have a letter, if I never give it to you, from a lady that wrote in about 1900 that the store was first, it was started over at Somerville. And he moved to Imbler when the railroad didn't go there, Walter Stringham. And so she said she moved from Imbler to over the Cove, and she came over to Walter Stringham's store to get all her supplies back in the 1900s. Mm-hmm. And he had kettles and he had clothes and he had a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. But now it's just primarily a grocery store.
What do you think was the relationship with the store across the street?
Well, I don't remember there was ever the two stores in Imbler at once.
I see.
I think yes.
This was the earlier one.
This was earlier than that one. Although that one goes back to before I started to school.
Well, when this one was built, do you think that this market building was just used as the post office?
I have no idea. Huh. Now, the post office used to be right in this part here. I can remember that.
Oh, the Kittle Building.
Yeah, in front of the Kittle Building at one time. Huh. And then it was over across the street in the building that was burnt there where the restaurant is at for a number of years. And I can remember it being here, and I can remember there, and I can remember the three, but I cannot tell you the time. Oh, no,
okay.
I can't.
No, H.L. Wagner's and Sons.
Yeah.
Originally, this building was used for apple storage, but a fire destroyed it when it contained nearly 90,000 boxes of apples. Clayton's father used insurance to rebuild. It is now used by the grandson of H.L. Wagner, the man who started the grass seed industry in the Grand Ronde Valley.
Now, that just about tells that when the warehouse burnt, my father, there was several sawmills back in the Somerville, and I remember him going back there to get lumber to build it, and it's really built. The fellow that built the deal was the one that built the elevators for Grand Round Mercantile Building, Pioneer Flouring Mill, by their name in their Island City. Pete Boskett was his name, and he was a builder, and one of the things, I don't know, I probably told you these two little stories. You probably don't want these little anecdotes in there.
Well, I can't put very much under each of these. I'm just trying to get the basic facts.
Yeah. Because I can remember there's one gal that's about my age that hadn't started to school when that burnt, Blanche Lively. She's a teacher in Portland and retired now, her and her husband at Hillsboro. And she said, I can remember the smell of those rotten apples there. And I thought I was probably the only one that knew about it ever being burned. At the extra lean-to was put on by my dad.
Yeah.
And it had the at that time the state-of-the-art packing machines and things that are a lot different now.
Am I correct that H.L. Wagner's grandson now operates it?
Yeah.
What's his name?
Howard Wagner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think you and I saw his house when we went out and looked over the field.
The beef field is his.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, then this one. Mr. Skillings built the Valley Ironworks in the late 1800s. Starting out as a wooden blacksmith shop, it has had many owners, all engaged in some kind of metalwork, such as repair of farm machinery.
Yeah, farm machinery and old truck beds and things like that. Mm-hmm. That's pretty well covered. And then he's made, off and on, they have some fellows that have been real good on these old stairs and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, what they're making your house and these different houses.
And ornamental fences, too, I suppose.
Things like that.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, it's a
good business. I wasn't completely sure about this building, but during much of the 20th century, this building has served as a garage and gasoline station. In earlier years, it served as a livery stable and storehouse.
Yeah, it's never served actually as a garage. The garage is the one next door to it. Now, did you know Veda Fowler had passed away here?
I saw the name, but I didn't know.
Yeah, and her boys. Sons had these music machines and things here in LeGrand, and she had, I think, six or seven brothers.
Oh, Bob Fellow.
Yeah, Bob Fellow. Mm-hmm. And that was her son, and it's a shame she could have told so many stories, that worse than I have.
Well, was this one just the storage?
Yeah, this building? Just been as a storage building that I know of. My cousin that was up here, he took some pictures of that, and I think you came up with the one for bringing the hay in the back. And
I guess I didn't take a picture of the building next door to it.
No, I don't think you did.
When you were talking about the garage.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting. One of the boys' father is one of the industrial managers in Portland of Greenbrier Company.
You mentioned that.
And I see the stock in their company has gone up from $8 to about $20 almost.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a raise in his wages, too.
All right, Blue Mountain Seeds is Immler's history-making place for grass seed. You didn't say very much about that. Maybe you could say some more.
Well, yeah, that and the Wagner warehouse, and, well, better not mention because there's actually been three. The Becks have got a small cleanery out there just for growers. But that and Barenberg's are the main commercial cleaners of grass seeds. And that particular building is their fertilizer building. And it is one that burnt down here, oh, I can't tell you what years it was, several years ago. And I could almost tell too, because it's about the year that I dug my well.
I have the picture of it, of the fire here.
No, I don't believe so. No, that's not it. That's the warehouse at Burton about 1920. That was right just across the railroad track from it.
Right, this is page 8. So what was this building? I thought it was the grain elevator.
It is a grain elevator. Yeah. That's where my dad was working at the time at Burton.
The other building that burned was where this one is?
It burned and replaced. That's the replacement. We had quite a deal.
Well, I do have that here. Previously, it had been a loose storage site for fertilizer.
Yeah.
A severe fire, which threatened explosion, was extinguished with water from the artesian well on Clayton's farm.
Yeah, that's the one that, they moved everybody out of Embry on that.
Why is this important in relation to grass seed?